Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Nemak's fourth quarter 2016 earnings call. Armando Tamez, Nemak's CEO, Alberto Sava, CFO, and Adrian Althoff, Investor Relations Associate, are here this morning to discuss the company's performance and answer any questions that you may have. As a reminder, today's conference is being recorded and will be available on the company's Investor Relations website. I'll now turn the call over to Adrian Althoff.
Thank you, operator. Good morning and welcome, everyone. We very much appreciate your participation. Armando Tamez, our CEO, will lead off today's call by providing an overview of our business and financial highlights. Alberto Sava, our CFO, will then discuss key industry trends and our fourth quarter financial results in more detail. Afterwards, we will open up for a Q&A session. Before we get started, let me remind you that information discussed on today's call may include forward-looking statements regarding the company's future financial performance and prospects, which are subject to risks and uncertainties. Actual results may differ materially, and the company cautions not to place undue reliance on these forward-looking statements. Nemak undertakes no obligation to publicly update or revise any forward-looking statements, whether as a result of new information, future events, or otherwise. I will now turn the call over to Armando Tamez.
Thank you, Adrian. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Nemak's fourth quarter 2016 results conference call. I am pleased to share that we reported solid financial results across the regions. We saw EBITDA increase 13% year-on-year, mainly due to good operating performance and a better product mix. As in previous quarters in the year, the ramp-up of new programs in Europe and Asia further supported margins. For the full year, EBITDA grew 5%, mainly due to the above-mentioned effects in the quarter, as well as positive non-recurring effects of metal price lag. Meanwhile, revenues decreased 5%, mainly due to lower year-over-year aluminum prices and lower volumes, as increased volumes in our European and rest of world operations were insufficient to offset reductions in North America. In a clear sign that our customers continue to value Nemak as a strategic partner, this year we secured new business contracts across our product lines worth approximately $875 million in annual revenues, more than 60% of which represented incremental programs. This included two new programs this quarter to produce battery housings for a new hybrid platform of Daimler's in Europe. To date, our total sales backlog in structural and electric vehicle components, our new business lines, represents approximately $270 million in annual revenues. In order to further reinforce our foundation for growth, we continue to focus investments on three main areas: capacity expansions, supporting new production programs in cylinder heads and engine blocks, the creation of new machining capacity, including one new site in Mexico to help drive margins, and the ramp-up of new programs to produce structural components in new facilities in Slovakia, Poland, and Mexico. Capital expenditures, excluding acquisitions, amounted to $164 million in the quarter, reaching a total of $541 million in the year. On November 1st, we successfully consummated our acquisition of Chevre Dokkum, marking a new milestone in our European footprint strategy. The integration process has been advancing according to plan. In addition to reporting good results, our Turkey operation helped us grow our sales backlog in the quarter, being selected as the production site for two new programs to supply cylinder heads to European OEMs. On November 17, Fitch, the rating agency, raised its outlook on Nemak to positive from stable, citing our solid global business position, credit profile, and operating performance, among other factors. With this later revision, the three major rating agencies, Fitch, Moody's, and Standard & Poor's, all have Nemak's rating with a positive outlook, one notch below investment grade. I am also pleased to share that we continue to build on our track record in automotive lightweighting, winning Mexico's National Technology and Innovation Award in the categories of Process Innovation and Product Innovation. These awards represent a new milestone in our journey to develop new technologies which help us make vehicles more efficient. As you may recall from our previous calls, for the full year, we were also honored by several of our customers. BMW recognized us as one of the most innovative suppliers. In addition, we received Ford World Excellence Award, the General Motors Supplier Quality Award, and the Volvo Cars Quality Excellence Award, among others. Moving on, I would like to provide some more color on structural components. I am very pleased with the progress we have made to date in developing our structural component business, and we remain more confident than ever in its promise for Nemak in the medium to long run. We continue to see our customers keen on lightweighting as a lever for reducing emissions and improving efficiencies in their next generation of vehicles, and on making aluminum structural components a key part of this strategy. We reiterate our objective of reaching $1 billion in annual revenues in structural components. However, we are seeing our customers bring new aluminum structural component programs to the market at a slower rate than originally anticipated, mainly due to the limited capacity and longer development cycles for these components. As a result, we now expect it will take us between 18 to 24 months longer to meet this objective. In response to growing demand for sustainable mobility solutions across the markets we serve, we recently conducted a deep analysis of trends shaping the future of the automotive industry and developed a new strategic framework for Nemak looking ahead to the next decade. Through this strategic review, we identified three main growth pillars for Nemak. One, maximize our core powertrain business. Two, secure a leading position in complex structural components. And three, leverage our existing technological capabilities to capture share in electric vehicle components. Based on consultations with industry experts, we expect that hybrids and pure electrics will together make up around 10% of new light vehicles by 2025. With aluminum accounting for a progressively larger share of vehicle content due to the automakers' needs to further optimize battery range and efficiency. Given aluminum's weight advantage and superior mechanical properties, it has emerged as a material of choice for components across a variety of complex EV applications. Moreover, hybrid vehicles, which we expect to grow slightly faster than pure electrics in the period, contain both an internal combustion engine and an electric motor, requiring more aluminum content than vehicles with a conventional powertrain. With that, I will hand off the call to Alberto Sada, Nemak's CFO.
Thank you, Armando, and good morning, everyone. Let me start by sharing relevant industry data that sheds light on our results. This quarter, the seasonally adjusted annual rate, or SAAR, for the U.S. vehicle sales increased 1% from the same period in 2015, capping a record year in that market. Continuing a two-year-long trend, pickups and SUVs capture share vis-a-vis small and mid-sized sedans, supporting further profitability gains for automakers. North America vehicle production was up 2.3%, mainly due to the ongoing ramp-up of new production facilities in the region. However, Nemak customer production remained flat, mainly due to FCA's downscales of their compact and mid-sized sedans, which offset the production growth just mentioned. During the period, favorable industry conditions prevailed in Europe. Vehicle sales SAAR grew by 3.6% year-on-year, mainly driven by higher volumes in Western Europe. Vehicle production and Nemak's customers' production in the region were up 1.9% and 2.8% respectively. Moving on to Nemak results, we saw total volumes down 5% as lower volumes in North America were partially offset with higher volumes in rest of the world. The downscale of FCA's mid-size sedans line remained a headwind for U.S. sales. Meanwhile, our operations in China posted strong growth on the back of new production programs, more than offsetting declines in South America by a wide margin. Europe remained flat, mainly due to scheduled downtime at some of our customers' engine plants. Total revenues were down 5%, mainly due to the volume effect previously described. Lower aluminum prices also had an impact, but to a lesser extent. Due to aluminum pass-through arrangements with our customers, the aluminum effect just mentioned did not have any major impact on profitability. Operating income increased 2%, mainly as a result of an improved sales mix of higher value-added products and good operating performance in all regions. During the quarter, NEMAC recorded a non-cash extraordinary charge of $13 million related to the phase-out of the lost foam production line in its Alabama operations. Most of the volume produced at this line was shifted to our facility in Kentucky, where we are now producing these components using the high-pressure die-casting process. Absent this effect, operating income would have increased 17%. The increase in operating income already explained enabled 4Q16 EBITDA to increase 12.7% year-on-year. 4Q16 EBITDA margin was 18.7%, much higher than the 15.7% reported in 4Q15. 4Q16 EBITDA per equivalent unit reached $15.80, up from $13.30 reported in 4Q15. Moving on to our financial costs, they went from $7 million in the fourth quarter of 15 to $29 million in the fourth quarter of 16. The bulk of the increase is explained by the effect on our balance sheet of the depreciation of the peso. Since our debt is predominantly denominated in U.S. dollars, the movement of the peso creates non-cash FX movements reflected in our financing costs. In contrast, interest expenses were $18 million, a $2 million decrease versus the fourth quarter of 15. Net income decreased 2% year-over-year as higher financial costs related to the depreciation of the peso, combined with the extraordinary charge already explained, more than offset the increase in operating income. I would like to conclude with a quick review of our balance sheet. As of the end of December, we had a net debt position of $1.3 billion, $52 million higher than the same time last year. Cash and cash equivalents were $129 million. I will now hand the call back to Armando.
Thank you, Alberto. On a final note, I would like to touch on our outlook for 2017. We expect to continue delivering solid operational growth at the global level, with Europe and rest of the world remaining our fastest growing regions. For 2017, we expect volume of 51.6 million equivalent units, revenues of $4.4 billion, EBITDA of $802 million, and CapEx of $430 million. Excluding the positive EBITDA effect we saw from non-recurring events in 2016, this outlook represents a growth of approximately 3% in EBITDA versus last year. I would now like to open the call for your questions. Operator, please instruct the participants on how to place their questions.
Sure. Ladies and gentlemen, at this time we'll be conducting a question and answer session. If you'd like to ask a question, please press star 1 to enter the question queue. A confirmation tone will indicate that your line has entered the queue, and you may press star 2 if you wish to remove your question from the queue. As a reminder, for anyone using speaker equipment, it may be necessary that you pick up your handset before pressing the star keys. One moment, please, while we pull for everyone's questions. Our first question comes from the line of Juan Tavares with Citi. Please proceed.
Hi, thank you. Good morning, gentlemen. My first question is just to understand a little bit more the guidance that you just mentioned. I think if I caught the number right, you said EBITDA of 802. That would suggest a margin of around $15.5 per unit, which is actually lower than what you delivered for the full year of 2016. So I'm curious, why would you be expecting further margin pressure this year, and also maybe in the context of structural components, as you mentioned that the pace of, penetration of structural components in aluminum is slower than expected. What exactly do you see in terms of difference per region? I know Europe is where you're seeing most of your demand, but is there any concern as we head into the potential phase of growth in the U.S. of that being even slower?
Thank you, Juan. Let me just answer in two parts. The first one, as I indicated during my presentation, we have a non-recurring effect of a metal lag that we do not foresee that we will have it this year. So that explains the reason why we are growing to 800 or projecting to have an EBITDA of 802, which is in line to what we had last year, excluding this non-recurring metal lag effect. On the second portion related to the penetration of structural component business, as I indicated, we still see that we will have $1 billion in revenues. As I indicated, we're expecting, rather than to reach that by 2020, that we will take us approximately between 18 to 24 months longer. One of the main reasons for that is that our customers are indicating that there is not capacity in the industry, which is true. Every single piece that it is going to produce requires a greenfield investment, and that is limiting the availability of suppliers that they can trust for new products. So this is a limited limiting factor. The second is that they are realizing that they need to change the new vehicle platforms completely and redesign those, and they are waiting for the new vehicles to come into the market with the new design. So based on that, we are, again, confident that we will reach the $1 billion, but it is going to take us a little bit longer. And as you indicated, certainly in Europe, we are seeing significantly higher demand and possibility to gain volume. And the main reason for that is legislation. In or regulations in Europe are more strict than there are than they are in North America. Just to remind you, in Europe, they are expecting to reach 95 grams by 2021. That is equivalent, Juan, to approximately 60 miles per gallon by 2021, whereas in the U.S., it is expected that they will reach 54.5 by 2025. So that is, to some extent, the reason that Europe is moving at a much faster pace than the U.S.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
And our next question comes from the line of Alex Falco with HSBC. Please proceed with your question.
Hi, good morning. Just wanted to go over the geographical breakdown and different trends here. Is there any read-through with, you know, lower volumes in the U.S.? Is there anything there that is worth mentioning and what we can expect specifically to North America going to what can explain fourth quarter and basically what is the read-through going forward? That's the first question. And second question is, do you see any you've spoken about there's no new you know, you need you know, investments in capacity for any new parts that are, you know, are going to be supplied right now. Are there any plans that you are hearing from your clients where this CapEx is going to be deployed and in which pace? Thank you.
Yes, Alex. Hi, this is Alberto. Related to your question about the volumes performance of North America, I think we have been seeing that same effect most of the year, which is the downscale of FCA's mid-size and small-size vehicles in the region. And if you recall, we have also mentioned that we're producing for that platform not only one product, but three products. So that has an additional effect on our volume. So that's the majority of the negative effect that we saw in North America. For next year, I mean, we're assuming that most of that performance will remain for that particular platform.
Okay.
And related to the second question about the investments from our customers, we haven't seen any changes of investment pattern from them. I think they are sticking with their original plans in relation to the engine and powertrain. So no major change seen there so far in North America.
Awesome. Thank you.
And our next question comes from the line of Valentin Mendoza with Banorte. Please proceed.
Hi, good morning, everyone. I have a couple of questions. The first one is related to your impressive EBITDA margin expansion during the quarter. In the press release, you mentioned that at some extent it came from a ramp-up in the in-house machining. Can you please give us some color on what is the current percentage of this in-house machining? And the second one is, can you please break down the different contribution to this expansion coming from the different factors, either the operating efficiencies, this in-house machining, and probably some FX tailwinds?
Yeah, sure, Valentin. This is Alberto again. Yes, as you correctly pointed out, machining is an important part of our strategy to expand our margins. So far, we are on track with our plans to continue doing more machining in-house. Roughly, we are machining about 45% in-house of our needs. So gradually, that number should be increasing going forward as part of our strategic plan and in line with the investments we're putting into machining. Related to the margin expansion on the quarter, I think it's mostly of it is related to product mix and efficiencies. As we're seeing higher value-added products, that includes more machining, that includes more complex castings, which have more complex geometry, additional processes. So all in all, it's higher value-added products that is impacting our bottom line, together with the efficiencies that we're seeing in all of our operations. We saw efficiencies practically on the three operations, as well as better product mix. That explains the majority of the margin expansion in the quarter.
Thank you very much, Alberto. One final question, if I may. What price did you use for guidance for the aluminum, and what exchange rate are you assuming?
Yeah, on the aluminum side, we are expecting an LME figure, which is the basis for most of our prices, to be in the neighborhood of 1,600 on average. That may obviously be moving up and down depending on how we see aluminum developing. We have seen some of our prices go a little bit up lately, but we also need to consider that, LME is one guide, but our aluminum price is a blend of not only LME, but also the secondary market in North America and Europe, and that puts the aluminum a little bit lower. So on a blended basis, we see that to be in the neighborhood of the $1,600 per ton. And related to the FX. Mm-hmm. Sorry,
Valentin. It was about the FX, sorry.
Yes, on the FX side, we're seeing the peso to be at $21 pesos per dollar, and the euro exchange rate to be at around 1.1 euros per dollar. Dollars,
yes. Thank you very much, Alberto.
Sure. And now our next question comes from the line of Shields Bay with IMCO. Please proceed.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking the question. I'm fairly new to the company. Wondering, do you guys have any U.S. plants at all, or is everything outside the U.S.? And two, just wondering if you can walk me through how your contracts are set up with your customers. Is it based on a certain number of volume? Is this based on a certain time frame? And how are raw material prices passed through? Thank you.
Thank you, Chills. This is Armando. We have plants in 16 different countries. We have actually 37 manufacturing plants. We have in Mexico 11 plants, manufacturing plants, and in the U.S. We have four locations in which we have different plants. We have plants in Tennessee, Alabama, Kentucky, and Wisconsin, as well as one plant in southern Ontario, which is in Windsor, in Canada, and other plants, as we have indicated, in South America, in Europe, and in Asia. The very important element to mention is the following. For cylinder heads, we are the only independent producer for these components that has facilities in the U.S. To produce these parts. There is no one else that has plants or independent companies that have location in the U.S. And the contracts related to, we have two elements in the contract for the pricing. The first one is the metal price, which is, for most of the cases, a very simple formula in which we have the weight of the casting plus a factor, which is related to a the price of aluminum on the region. It's an index. It could be London Metal Exchange. It could be American Metal Market, Metals Week, or any other index that to some extent tries to replicate the cost of the material in the region, plus a factor. So that element, again, is a natural hedge for us. If the prices of aluminum go up, that portion of the price of the component also is adjusted up or down. And the other part of the pricing is what we call it value added, which in that value added, we have the labor, electricity, natural gas, sand, and all the processes that we have to produce that particular product, plus, of course, our profitability. Does that answer the question?
Our next question actually comes from the line of Luis Miranda with Santander. Please proceed.
Yes, hi. Good morning, everyone. Armando, Alberto, Adrian. Armando, I wanted just to go back a little bit to the guidance, and if you could help me to understand a couple of points. The first one, maybe for me the most relevant, in terms of the profitability and EBITDA per head, as was previously mentioned, we're expecting a decline. It's small, but it's nevertheless a small decline year over year. And when we see about your product mix, your efficiencies, your increase in machining, and the ramp up of the structural products that you have already signing the year before, shouldn't we be expecting at least some stability in the EBITDA per head and not a decline? That's the first one. I can go to the other ones after that.
Luis, again, as I explained, if we isolate this non-recurring effect that we have last year due to the aluminum metal lag, it was a non-recurrent event, we are assuming that we will have a very similar margins. We are not expecting or we are not projecting that our margins will deteriorate. On the contrary, we are seeing a more benefit or a small increase, as always. This is how we try to set our plans with very tight cost control and so on. So we are not expecting that. This is, again, an element that we have in non-recurring positive effect that we're not expecting to have this year.
Oh, okay, thank you. And the other one is with this delay in the structural component to reach the $1 billion, what could we expect in terms of growth in backlog during this year? Do you see the company bidding on some new projects, or this is also going to be a delay in 2017 where we could see a stabilization in the backlog for structural components?
Always, we, as we speak, are quoting significantly more programs for structural components and electric vehicles than ever in our history. Just to give you a little bit of flavor, on average, we were quoting in the range of about maybe 300-400 million. Now we are in the process of quoting double that number of programs and with a lot of different customers, not only in Europe, but also in North America, as well as in Asia. We certainly have been very successful in convincing our customers to trust us and award us the business. As I indicated, we are still with the same objective of reaching the $1 billion. But rather than to have those revenues coming in 2020, we're expecting that it will take between 18 to 24 months, a little bit longer, but we are in the same track.
Okay, perfect. And, Sherman, the last one is you finished 45% of in-house machining. What's the objective for this year, at the end of this year? I don't know if you could share it with us.
Yeah, we're increasing. Last year, we invested more than $100 million just in adding capacity in machining. As I was indicating during my presentation, we just opened a new facility in Mexico, and we're expanding the machining content in all regions. We will continue with this trend. Our goal is to reach by 2020 approximately close to 70% of machining in-house, and we will keep external suppliers, the ones that are performing better, as an alternative, and we will analyze on a case-by-case basis if it makes sense for us or to rely on external sources. But we are moving. Remember, when we started this type of conference calls, we were machining approximately 30% on average. Now we are at 45 and continue increasing that on a case-by-case basis. But we were projecting that we will continue growing and reaching approximately 70% by the end of the decade.
Perfect. Thank you, Armando.
Thank you, Luis.
Our next question comes from the line of Vanessa Quiroga with Credit Suisse. Please go ahead.
Hi, thank you. Can you help me understand better how you plan to penetrate further the hybrid / electrical cars market? Is there any investment that you are making directly in order to achieve this higher penetration, to be able to tap those clients with a lower scale? Can you explain that? Thanks.
Yeah, thank you, Vanessa. Certainly, we are seeing, as I indicated, three main pillars that we are projecting to continue benefiting and growing our business. The first one is the powertrain, which is the conventional aluminum cylinder heads, engine blocks, transmission housing, and so on. This is, we have already the capacity and the technology to produce these components. We are just making small additional investments to support further capacity in some regions. The second is the structural components, in which we see great opportunities, but also new opportunities are arising in the electric models. As you know, hybrids, hybrid vehicles, they have two engines in the same vehicle. One is the conventional internal combustion engine that everybody is familiar with, and second, they have an electric engine. And the electric engine is, again, a different type of engine, but the housing is very similar to a housing for a transmission case. We have the technology to produce this type of components, and we are seeing a high demand of hybrid vehicles, as I was indicating during my presentation. We have been awarded already with four different hybrid components, and we're expecting that will continue increasing. This is another possibility for our customers to comply with the new regulations for fuel efficiency and CO2 reduction, in which by adding this electric motor into their vehicle, they can achieve the miles per gallon that the government required, or the reduction in CO2 emissions. So the technology is identical to the one that we use to produce some engine blocks or transmission housing. So we have that capability. Our customers know us very well. And we are now exploring the possibility of working directly with our conventional customers, which they are introducing this type of models or engines to provide customers with these hybrid vehicles, as well as other companies that are specializing in producing only electrical models. So we're talking to these two types of customers, and certainly we have expectations that we will continue growing in this segment, as well as on the structural component side.
Okay, that's very useful. And going to the topic of the metal lag, can you tell us in 2016 how much of the margin increase was due to the metal lag and how much was from the FX effect? Thanks.
Yes, Vanessa. On the metal lag, we had roughly about $20 million of effect on metal lag. That's why when you subtract that to the 2016 performance, you would see that our EBITDA per piece is essentially the same, slightly higher on 2017 versus 2016. And related to the FX, I think it's important to mention that, I mean, yes, sometimes we have a little bit of positive effect due to the small portion of the peso-denominated cost in Mexico, but we also have the other currencies that are also weighting on different directions. So most of the what we assume as non-recurrent is primarily metal lag, which is one-off, and we expect that as aluminum prices either increase a little bit or stabilize, that will not be there.
Mm-hmm. Okay. That's great. Thank you.
Now, our next question comes from the line of Juan Tavares with Citi. Please proceed.
Hi, thanks. Maybe just to follow up on the recent question on the opportunities in EVs and hybrids, would you need to make an acquisition to be able to fulfill that potential demand or make incremental investments, or does your existing capacity kind of be adjusted for providing those that engine housing for electric vehicles? And then second, maybe if you can comment if you have any updated views of what the implications or any adjustments to your business model if we do end up seeing a border adjustment tax in the U.S. Thanks.
Thank you, Juan. The first one is that, no, we do not need to acquire anyone to produce the components for the electric vehicles. We have the proven technology for many, many years. We have made high-pressure aluminum components, and we have a lot of plants. We actually sell today more than $1.1 billion for high-pressure die-casting products. So our customers worldwide know our the technical capabilities and great performance that we have in this. So we will look at the opportunity to reuse existing assets whenever it is possible. And also, if needed, we will make the additional capital expenditures if we have a solid business case that conveys good profitability, as we do for the any type of new business that we get. On the second topic, and we were expecting this question, certainly, we believe, Juan, that I think it's today a little bit early to really give you an answer on what will happen with the possibility that the U.S. government imposes the new tariffs or taxes or border taxes. I think it's important to let you know that the auto industry has developed a lot of capacity in the region, not only in Mexico, but also in the U.S., as well as in Canada, under the free trade agreement. There has a huge investment. And there is a lot of automotive suppliers located in Mexico for cost and quality reasons. And certainly, as I indicated, in our opinion, it's a little bit too early to tell. We understand that the U.S. government, Mexican government, as well as the Canadian one, will start negotiations in May of this year, and certainly we are looking at what will happen. But I think it's also important to let you know the following. Approximately only 20% of our total revenues are exported to the U.S. The rest, it is produced in Mexico to customers in Mexico, or it is produced in the U.S., or North America, as well as in Canada, as I indicated, also South America, Europe, and Asia. So we will have only 20% potential impact. It is also important to mention that Nemak is the only company, and I'd like to repeat it, that has capacity to produce cylinder heads in the U.S., and very few of our competitors have capacity to produce other type of components. A few may have for blocks or transmissions, but not a lot. There is no capacity located in the U.S. to produce these types of components. It will take, in our opinion, between at least 2.5 to 3 years to build new capacity to provide these type of components if someone imposes very high tariff
and certainly that will potentially paralyze the industry. So we don't expect that to happen. That will have, in our opinion, a very negative effect, not only for the auto industry, but as well for the economy of the region. And last but not least, in the potential event that they impose tariffs, certainly we will talk to our customers and like to pass this potential additional cost to our customers, and they, on the other hand, most likely will try to pass that on the consumer. But as I indicated, I think it is still very early to give you a clear opinion on that regard, and certainly we are looking and see how this develops, and we will adapt to the best of our abilities for that.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Our next question comes from the line of Gilberto Garcia with Barclays. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for the call. A couple of questions, if I may. First, and apologies if I missed this in your introduction remarks, can you give us a breakdown of your volume growth expectations for this year? And the second, I guess going back to the topic of moving production back to the U.S., do you have spare capacity in your U.S. Facilities? And if so, how feasible would it be to relocate some of the Mexican production to the U.S.?
Yes. Hi, Gilberto. This is Alberto. Related to your first question on volume, we don't give guidance on a per-region basis for on the volume side. But I think it's worth mentioning that directionally, we are not seeing much growth in North America for the reasons that we just discussed. Essentially, the industry is expected to be stable in the region, but where we're seeing our growth is primarily in Europe and in China, which is part of the rest of the world operation. So that's where we're seeing the most of our growth for 2017.
And answering your second part of your question, Gilberto, we don't have a lot of open capacity in the U.S. We're using our plants at approximately 80-85% of the nominal capacity, so we don't have a lot of opportunity. And certainly we have a lot of production of castings in Mexico. It will be a huge investment to relocate that capacity. And also, I can tell you that it will be also a huge incremental cost of producing these products in the U.S. Those are the labor intensive. And just to give you a little bit of flavor, even though we have our plants located in southern U.S., where we have more competitive wages and salaries, we have a cost difference of about 4 to 5 times on a per hour level. So that will certainly have an impact on the products that we produce.
Okay, that's very clear. A follow-up, if I may. You mentioned that you are the only independent producer of relevant size in the U.S., but what about your clients? Would they have capacity to insource some of the production that is currently done by you or by other players?
Yeah, very good question. When I was mentioning independent, that means not considering capacity that OEMs or customers will have in the U.S. Some of them do have capacity. I can tell you that Ford Motor Company doesn't have any capacity at all to produce aluminum components in not only in the U.S. but in the world. They decided to exit that. Chrysler, or Fiat Chrysler, they don't produce any cylinder heads in the U.S. In the region. General Motors, they do have capacity to produce heads and blocks in the U.S. And to our knowledge, they are operating close to capacity. So for the Detroit 3, that would mean new investments in capacity to produce the components. We do also sell to Nissan in the U.S. And they don't have a capacity to produce cylinder heads. They do have for engine blocks, and also in our view, they are running at capacity. So for all or major the customers, the other customer is the Korean Hyundai Kia. They also don't have a capacity to produce this type of components in the U.S. So I can summarize by telling you that in most of the cases for our existing customers, that will mean to build new greenfield facilities to put capacity in place. That will take a significant amount of CapEx plus an approximately 2 to 3 years to really launch these plans, plus validate the products and so on. So we see this very unlikely in the short to midterm.
Understood. Thank you very much.
Now our next question comes from the line of Alejandro Azar with GBM. Please go ahead.
Hi. Thank you for taking my questions. Congratulations on the results. I'm sorry, I couldn't hear the capacity on the FCA and GM. I don't know if you said little to none.
Yeah. I'm going to repeat it. FCA doesn't have any capacity to produce cylinder heads in the region, in North America. They don't. They produce one single engine block in one of their facilities in Indiana. To our knowledge, they are running at capacity. That's what we know about the capabilities for FCA in the region. GM, on the other hand, they do have casting plants where they produce aluminum cylinder heads and engine blocks, certain portion. To our knowledge, they are operating at capacity, so there is, to our knowledge, not a lot of that they can insource, at least to our knowledge, or without making a significant investment. And as I indicated, it could take some time for them to build that additional capacity, plus validate production and so on, plus tooling cost, okay, which also represents a huge investment.
Okay, and one more, if I may, regarding your CapEx expectations going forward, does the $430 million, would you say that includes your new, per se, guidance of 18 to 20 months further the structural component business?
Yes, it does. The 430 certainly is to build the capacity that we will require for 2018, 2019. We are always investing ahead of time, so again, takes some period of time to buy the equipment, test it, validate the new products, and so on. So basically, we have some time that we need to invest ahead of start of production.
Yeah, so my question would be if that 430 is reduced from a previously number that you had in mind before reducing that time frame or expanded that time frame. I'm sorry.
It is aligned to what we were projecting just a few years ago. Yes, it is aligned, maybe
okay,
a small reduction, but not very different.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Alex.
Now our next question comes from the line of Gene Bruni with BBVA. Please proceed.
Hi there. Thank you for taking my question. Just many of my questions have been answered. Just a couple of doubts. The first one is in terms of your guidance in volume. Can you give us the contribution from the assets in Europe in Turkey you just bought, and the Slovakian plant as well, if it's already operating? And the second one is on the structural business. Do you see any threat for this business or the growth of this business coming from a new political landscape that may be less favorable for the environment action? Thank you.
Yes, Jean, this is Alberto. Related to your first question about our volume guidance, yes, it does include the volume from our acquisition of Turkey. So we consolidated that plant in started to consolidate the financial figures in early November. So that includes Turkey for the full year. Remember, Turkey is not that big. It's a relatively small facility.
Yeah. Related to the second part of your question, Jean, what I can tell you is the following. There is right now no indication that there will be changes in the landscape related to regulations in the U.S., or at least not to our knowledge. Certainly, there are some people that are questioning if they need to continue investing heavily to comply with these regulations. But to our knowledge, the U.S. government has not made any decision yet related to changing the CAFE regulations that they have already in place. On the other hand, what I can tell you is that, and we have a very close look with our colleagues in Europe as well as in Asia, we are not foreseeing any changes in the environmental regulations in Europe. On the contrary, I think after the Volkswagen diesel scandal, regulators in Europe are more strict than before. And in China, due to the pollution that problems that they have in major or big cities, they are certainly trying to impose tougher regulations than in the past. So based on that, again, we cannot tell you that we are expecting a significant change. If any, it may come on a temporary basis, potentially in North America, in the U.S., but again, we don't have today any indication that this is going to change.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
There are no further questions at this time. I'll turn the call back over to management for any closing remarks.
Thank you, operator. I would just like to thank everyone for participating in today's call. Please feel free to contact us if you have any follow-up questions or comments. Have a good day.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. This does conclude our teleconference for today. We thank you for your time and participation, and you may disconnect your lines at this time. Have a wonderful rest of the day.